Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, author Rebecca Siegel offers media literacy advice to combat fake news and discusses her book, Loch Ness Uncovered: Media, Misinformation, and the Greatest Monster Hoax of All Time. The following conversation originally took place May 19th, 2024, and was recorded live at the American Writers Festival.
Good afternoon. Our next program focuses on how to know if what you hear and read in the news is true. Learning to spot bias, vet sources, and read critically are some of the most valuable skills we can pass on to young learners. Rebecca breaks down the role fake news has played in the Loch Ness Monster's roller coaster ride to fame, as discussed in the forthcoming book, Loch Ness Uncovered, which you were just promoting, and also equips young learners with some essential media literacy skills. All right, welcome, Rebecca.
Hi. Okay, so since we're grown-ups, I'm just going to talk to you about the book a little bit and how it has to do with fake news. So for my job, I write nonfiction books. That's what I do. And I pitched this idea to my agent. The true story behind the Loch Ness Monster, I'll actually back up. So it's not like a centuries-old story. The Loch Ness Monster first started being discussed in 1933, when basically this woman who ran a hotel on the shores of Loch Ness was... times were tough, and she saw something splash in the water, and she went to the hotel bar of the facility she managed. She was like, I saw something weird, and in small town style, people started talking about it, and then one story led to another, and she happened to know a journalist. He was a freelance journalist, and he wrote it up in his newspaper, the Inverness Courier. But keep in mind, this is 1933, so journalistic standards, we have a journalist in the room, two journalists in the room. Standards were a little bit different. So there wasn't a lot of fact-checking or emphasis on truth. It was a time known as the newspaper wars or circulation wars, which was, if you know yellow journalism in America, this was a sort of equivalent thing that was happening in Great Britain, where people were writing anything they could to get readers. So around this time, there were a lot of newspaper trends where newspapers would do things called, they would stage stunts, where they would say, who can fly from London to Manchester the fastest? And they would write stories about it, and readers would follow along, kind of like reality television. So there were some things like that, but then others were just silly, like who can design the hat of the future? And then people would design the hat that they thought was the best for the future, and then they would award a prize. And so this was one way to get readers. But other ways that they would get readers is they would make stuff up. So there were a series of love letters published in a London paper between two completely invented people. But people would read the newspaper every day because they wanted to know what happened between these two people. Their names were Oak and Ivy. And Oak was going to move to Africa, and Ivy couldn't bear to lose him. None of this was real. It was just the editors of the newspaper that wanted to make a buck, or the publishers, really, wanted to make a buck. So when this guy at the Inverness Courier heard this story about this lady who managed a hotel on the shores of Loch Ness, who saw something weird in the water, he wrote a story, and he said that she saw a monster. And not only did she see a monster, but she'd seen the monster that they all knew about. There was no monster in Loch Ness, okay? No one was talking about a monster in Loch Ness. There were some discussions of monsters, but in the grand Scottish culture, they believed in Kelpie, or they talked about Kelpies, but it was nothing specific to Loch Ness. Loch Ness was just a boring lake. In fact, it was a very popular tourist destination. The royal family loved to go to Loch Ness. Loch Ness was not a spooky place. But in 1933, this journalist was like, yes, it is. So that year, people started talking about it. And it wasn't even we all believe in the Loch Ness Monster. It was a monster? So people started to kind of go to the area to look, double check, there's not a monster there, is there? And the more people did that, the more newspapers started writing about the Loch Ness Monster, okay? So there was no monster, people just started talking about it. And I realize this is kind of a bummer, to write a children's book about how there is no Loch Ness Monster. That is a hard sell, as a children's book author, to introduce the greatest bummer of all time. But I promise you, the story that is in this book is actually wild. Okay, so 1933, we have this person make up a story. It starts printing, we start seeing newspaper stories about the Loch Ness Monster. Then we introduce the greatest character of all time. His real name, I swear to God, was Marmaduke Wetherell. That's a real name. And he was this, like, man about town who was, like, an aristocrat, and he kind of, like, he was like, I'm an amateur zoologist. He wasn't. I'm an amateur anthropologist. He wasn't. I'm an African big game hunter. He was, but he was really bad. Like, really bad. But what he was really good at was telling stories. Okay? And he also was into making movies, but his movies were never great. Like, he was cranking them out, and people were going to them, but he was not making millions, right? So we have this guy who's like kind of a scientist, kind of a sociologist, kind of a hunter, kind of a movie maker. He was a really good storyteller. So as he would do all these little adventures, he figured out, I can make a buck by making sure I'm telling the newspapers what I'm up to. So in the midst of all this Loch Ness Monster excitement, one newspaper in London, the Daily Mail, contacted Marmaduke Weather and they're like, do you want to go on a monster hunt? And he was like, uh-huh, I do. So he went on a monster hunt in Loch Ness. The biggest problem here is, of course, there is no monster in Loch Ness. So he's like, this is fine. I'm a movie maker. I know what to do. So he took a ashtray that was made out of a hippo foot as the most logical decision, and he made some monster prints on the side of the lake. And he was like, I got it. There is a monster. See? And everybody at first freaked out because, oh, my God, there is a monster. Newspapers started writing stories about how he discovered Loch Ness monster footprints. Everything's going great, and especially with the newspaper that he went on this monster hunt for, London's Daily Mail. They had paid him to go on this. They said, find us a monster. He did it, right? Then, unfortunately, a scientist was like, he looked at the footprints. He's like, those are not monster footprints, and in fact, those are definitely the hippo footprints. And more than that, I don't know how, but he's like, I can tell that those are dried hippo footprints, like from a dried foot. And then all of a sudden, the world started really laughing at Marmaduke Wetherill, okay? Like, everybody who had been excited that there was a Loch Ness Monster was now like, you dork. And then we get to this photo. So this photo is called the Surgeon's Photo. You've probably seen it. It's one of Time's 100 most recognized photos that have ever been taken. This photo has appeared on front pages of newspapers on all continents. And this photo came from Marmaduke Wetherill. So remember, he staged monster footprints on the side of Loch Ness. First, everybody believed him. Newspapers ran a bunch of stories. Marmaduke Wetherill is our hero. He has found the Loch Ness Monster. And then, when they figured out those aren't monster footprints, those are the taxidermy prints of a hippo, he got embarrassed. And Marmaduke Wetherill did not like that feeling, okay? So, as a zoologist, scientist, big game hunter, and movie maker, he said, I'm going to get him back. So Marmaduke Wetherill, who did have a lot of experience making movies, hired his son, who was an actor, his stepson, who was a movie special effects artist, his friend, who was a photographer, and the four of them built a little model monster. Okay? They made it out of a submarine that they bought at a Woolworths, which is just like a department store, and they used clay to build up a head and neck. They then weighted it so that it would stay upright and not flip over in the water. And in 1934, they took a trip to Loch Ness, floated the monster into the water, took a couple of photos, okay? No big deal. They found a nice spot that wouldn't show any background, so you couldn't tell that it was really 14 inches long. But then, there's a problem, because how can they sell this photo to the newspapers? Everybody knows Marmaduke Wetherill's name. Everybody's been making fun of Marmaduke. I should explain. Everyone was making fun of Marmaduke. A guy made a comedy album about Marmaduke. Okay? Another newspaper, a rival newspaper, did a whole fake Marmaduke Wetherill photo shoot with a guy with an elephant foot trash can putting footprints in the sand. Like, it was, he was the laughing stock, okay? So Marmaduke knew, I can't publish these photos as my own because everybody's going to know it was me. So they found this guy named R.K. Wilson, who was a surgeon. He was a gynecologist, but they called him a surgeon. And R.K. Wilson, who would later go on to be a spy, went to a photo shop on the shores of Scotland's Loch Ness and said, hey, do you mind developing these? And the guy developing them goes, you don't think you got a picture of the monster, do you? And R.K. Wilson goes, I might have. Okay, so now we have this flamboyant actor, Marmaduke Wetherill, and he's fully in the background. Okay, he's keeping his mouth shut. He has nothing to do with this. And we have this new guy, R.K. Wilson, this respectable London surgeon who says, like, oh, I don't know, I might have seen something in the water. Why don't you develop these photos? So the photos get developed. Lo and behold, my God, there's a monster. The guy who works at the Photoshop in Inverness, Scotland is like, you have to take these to the Daily Mail. The Daily Mail is the paper that made fun of Marmaduke Wetherill. The Daily Mail is the reason Marmaduke Wetherill's life is in the toilet. And R.K. Wilson's like, okay, that's a good idea. So they sell this bogus photo to the Daily Mail with the idea that as soon as they print it, Marmaduke Wetherill's going to jump forward and be like, who's the bozo now? But the Daily Mail prints this photo, April 21st, 1934, and the world loses its mind. This photo is immediately shared to other newspapers around the world. Now, granted, a lot of things happened at the same time, and I want to tell you a tiny bit about what made this photo so believable at this moment in 1934. Okay, there's five things that were happening. Number one, the economy in Scotland was in the toilet. People did not have enough money to feed themselves. They did not have enough money to buy what they needed. 40% of kids in Scotland were malnourished or undernourished, okay? People were really desperate. So anything that was going to give them a buck was welcome. People were taking any jobs they could. So the idea that maybe there was a monster there was very welcome to people who lived in Scotland. Number two, art and movie special effects specifically had made huge leaps and bounds that year. The movie King Kong. Has anybody seen the movie King Kong from 1933? So King Kong had this pioneering type of special effect called stop motion animation. And it didn't just feature an ape, it featured a bloodthirsty, long-necked dinosaur that emerged from the water looking exactly like this. And it was so spectacularly impactful for people who saw that movie that people started to think that they saw long-necked monsters in their own waterways. Okay, so that's going on. So we've suddenly got the monsters from movies feeling so realistic that maybe they could actually be appearing in the natural world. The other thing is politics. Politics was a nightmare. The book really gets into it. But guess which two monsters emerged on the global stage in the exact same year? Adolf Hitler and the Loch Ness Monster. Okay, so there was this idea that everything that we know and love, all the truths that we cherish as the human race, maybe they're not so solid. Terrible things are happening in the world. Scary monsters maybe are real. And piggybacking on that, science. Guess how many species were identified every single year in the 1930s? 12,000 a year, which averages to 33 new species a day. So there was this idea that maybe if you walked outside, you would discover like a new species of butterfly or worm or frog. And on top of that, there was something very interesting happening where a few things that had been considered mythical creatures were being discovered as actually maybe real. So, dragons. The Komodo dragon was discovered around this time by, not discovered, named around this time when a Dutch colonist basically went to an island in Indonesia where he had heard people were talking about giant dragons. That island was called Komodo. So he went and was like, oh man, those aren't real. So suddenly you see that, oh, maybe one mythical creature could actually be real. The other creatures that were being discovered, you might have heard of Kraken, like these sea beasts. Around the time of the Loch Ness Monster phenomenon, the giant squid and the colossal squid were both named, okay? So that contributed to this idea of like, well, maybe there is something in Loch Ness. Like, do we really know? But the biggest thing that is the biggest contributing factor to the Loch Ness Monster myth, without any shadow of a doubt, was fake news. So journalism, as I said, was pretty loosey-goosey at the time, right? Like, we're really going for profits here. So once these stories started trickling out of Scotland about the Loch Ness Monster, they formed a feedback loop, right? Where a story would be printed, people would read it, think about it, go to Loch Ness, and think like, oh, I don't know, maybe I did see something. And then that sighting would be reported, and then on and on and on, okay? And there were also these stories where you would have people go to Loch Ness, and they would say like, oh, do you see that shiny rock? And then other people said, that's not a rock. And then other people would say, you know, you're right, I don't think that is a rock. So the power of suggestion was also at play. And before you know it, everybody is starting to think that this could be real. So when Marmaduke Wetherill's silly little prank photo was printed in the newspaper, it was confirmation to an excited and curious world that, yes, there is a Loch Ness Monster. So, just to sort of drive home the point about this, how fake news and unreliable news really contributed to this, I'm going to read a handful of statements, okay? None of them are true. None of these are true. But some of these appeared in newspapers as though they were true, okay? So all of these are baloney. And I want you to use your little thing to give me a thumbs up if you think that, yes, a real live newspaper put this in print and sold it to people. Or a thumbs down if you think that is too preposterous. There is no way that that would appear in a newspaper. Okay. So the Loch Ness Monster in early sightings was sort of described in a bunch of different ways, right? So we think about it today as looking like a long-necked dinosaur, but at the beginning it didn't. It looked like a lot of different things. So which of these bogus descriptions appeared in actual newspapers? The Loch Ness Monster was slimy. So if you think it was, if a newspaper did that, give me a thumbs up. You are correct. The Loch Ness Monster was dotted with knobbly lumps. The Loch Ness Monster had one hump on its back. The Loch Ness Monster had three or more humps on its scaly back. Correct. The Loch Ness Monster had eight humps on its back. Correct. The Loch Ness Monster had a beard. The Loch Ness Monster had eyes like a car's headlights. The Loch Ness Monster had a dog face. The Loch Ness Monster looked like a camel. The Loch Ness Monster was much alike a zebra. Duh, that one is not zebra. Okay, good. So we have the idea. Here we go. Let's talk about size. Newspapers gave the readers some concrete numbers for just how big the Loch Ness Monster was. Which of these measurements appeared in real newspapers? The Loch Ness Monster was 6 to 8 feet long. It's very petite. 20 feet. 30 feet.
Oh.
50 feet. 60 to 100 feet long. As big as a soccer field.
Oh, no.
You guys know they play football. Oh, I mean, did that. Okay. As Nessie grew in popularity, so too did Nessie's sightings. People started seeing Nessies all over the world. Newspapers told their readers about a variety of activities in which the Loch Ness Monster and its relatives participated in. Which of these printed in newspapers? Someone saw the Loch Ness Monster swimming laps. Someone saw the Loch Ness Monster chase a boat. Feels a little real. Someone saw the Loch Ness Monster take a nap on the beach. Someone saw the Loch Ness Monster cross the road. Someone heard the Loch Ness Monster cough. It had allergies, I think. Someone saw, Someone saw an underwater explosion that rocketed the Loch Ness Monster's ancestor 60 feet into the air where it hung suspended for a few seconds before going into the sea.
What?
Someone saw the Loch Ness Monster doing taekwondo. We go. Okay. Newspapers offer advice for how to act if you saw the Loch Ness Monster. Which of these were actually printed? If you see the Loch Ness Monster, you should take a photo. We will pay you 100 pounds. You should trap it and reel it in. You should shoot it. You should leave it alone. You should shout the name of the Lord. Or you should hop into the water and ride it.
No.
Okay. So obviously the idea that a giant monster lived in Loch Ness inspired some questions, namely how it got in there. So newspapers provided answers for their readers. Which of these explanations for how the Loch Ness Monster got into Loch Ness were actually printed in real newspapers? It swam in via a canal. It swam in through a series of underground tunnels that connected a U-bend, that contained a U-bend, much like those found in a toilet's plumbing that connected the sea to the loch. Guys, newspapers were wild. Okay. It had always been there and only just woke up due to noisy road work. A deep sea volcano erupted and shot the monster through the air and into the loch. A mad scientist created the monster in his lab and deposited her into the water in the dead of night. That's the only one. This is crazy. Okay. Now, not everybody believed in the Loch Ness Monster. Some skeptics tried to rationalize with monster fans, and newspapers jumped in, right? Offering a bunch of completely bananas explanations, including which of the following. There was no Loch Ness Monster, it was just a dinosaur.
What?
There was no Loch Ness Monster, it was a horse.
What?
There was no Loch Ness Monster, it's a killer whale. There was no Loch Ness Monster, it's a lost pet crocodile. There was no Loch Ness Monster, it's a blimp. And there was no Loch Ness Monster, it is Princess Margaret. Okay, okay. Now, this is my last one. So the Loch Ness Monster, as I said, rose to fame at the same time as another monster, Adolf Hitler. And this created this really interesting storm where, for a little while, these two monsters shared newsprint, okay? That they were appearing in the newspapers at the same time. And in fact, there were even a little, there was a short amount of time where they were in the same stories. Which of these World War II Nessie stories actually printed in newspapers, okay? These are hard to believe. Nazi leadership declared that the Loch Ness Monster had hit an underwater mine and her body exploded. This is real. I mean, not real, but it really printed. Okay, Italian leadership, remember, allies. Italian leadership reported that a warplane had dropped a bomb on Nessie, killing her, and that pieces of her body washed ashore. Okay? British people reported that, okay, fine, yes, Nessie actually had been bombed, but she was healing nicely. Thank you very much. Okay. American soldiers found the Loch Ness Monster, examined her healing wounds, and gave her a waterproof machine gun. Very good, very good. Okay, so this is just sort of an example of the types of things that appeared in the media in the 1930s that made it seem like, okay, maybe there is a monster. And what I like about this as a nonfiction author is it's not political. I'm not going to make, hopefully, too many people upset about a politician or a political party, but I am teaching readers to feel skeptical and critical as they encounter media sources. So at the back of this book is a guide to developing media literacy skills, you know, which is just this umbrella set of skills that help a reader do things like evaluate the source, look for bias, think about some very simple things that we all do, you know, checking the URL, checking the bio, reverse image searching when you have a question. But these are things that we should be using in all aspects of our life, but we can learn about them in a fun monster story. So, thank you. That's really all I had to talk about. I'm happy to take any questions if anybody has any. I did go to Scotland and go on a monster hunt to write this book. She's not there.
How did you discover this story?
I was listening to a podcast, Guide to the Unknown. It's a very, like, dorky, sweet podcast of a brother and sister who tell stories. And so, just in case you don't know, I write usually about things like the American Crewed Spaceflight Program. I have a book right now that I'm writing about World War II. So, writing about a cryptid is not really in my normal comfort zone, but I was so interested in the story, and I loved how it had to do with movies and art and politics and finance, and I called my agent, and I said, should I write a book about the Loch Ness Monster? And she was like, who is this? Ultimately, I'm really glad I did, because I think it touches on something that librarians are trying to teach, which is media literacy, but it's so hard to do now without people getting mad. So, any other questions?
How many years did it take you to write the book?
3 years. And I interviewed a bunch of people. So I interviewed a former CIA fake news analyst. I interviewed an MIT vision science professor to understand like the science mechanics of monster sightings, just like the visual mechanics of it. Talked to psychologists, psychiatrists. I interviewed some monster hunters who were surprisingly lovely. I had coffee with the grandson of the guy who took this picture. I know, he was very nice. And what's interesting is when you go to Scotland, I was nervous thinking like, oh no, I'm gonna go to this beautiful little village and I'm gonna offend everybody by being like, I know it's not real. But they all were like, obviously it's not real. There's nothing there. But what was really interesting was the water of Loch Ness, because of the nature of the peat. So Loch Ness is very steep sides, right? And that means that the water rushes down the mountainsides or the hillsides and into the lake. So it has a very high concentration of peat in it, which is a really fine sediment. So the water is black, like ink black. And they locals do a game where they will drop a penny and they time to see how long it takes for the penny to disappear. Or if you stick your arm in, by the time your elbow's wet, you can't see your fingertips anymore. So it's black. And seeing that, it does make you realize, like, I could see how there would be this myth, you know, developing. Because you really, it's so hard to see. But I did go on a sonar guided hunt. And there's nothing there.
What time of the day did you go for the hunt?
Oh, like noon.
Oh,
that's lovely. Any other questions? Yeah.
Yes, you might have mentioned it, but like, why did the department do all this? Like, you said it was out of shame and stuff. But like, I feel like when I think about the people who generate fake news stories now, like, do you think that's also still shame, or still sort of like power, money, attention?
So that's like the mystery of this, and it's hard because I don't want to put any words in his mouth. Like, so the question is, why did Marmaduke Wetherell stage this stunt? So his grandson thinks he did it because it was funny. He just wanted to laugh. Other people have thought, like, he did it for revenge, you know, to get back to the newspaper. I think, to be honest, it was a mix. He had a lot of cash, so I don't think he was necessarily needing to use this for his own personal finances. I think it was pride. I think he was irritated. I think he kind of wanted to stab the editors a little bit and make fun of them for making a mistake. And I also do think he thought it was funny. Like, wouldn't this be hilarious if we got the biggest newspaper in England to print our fake monster photo? And so there have been a lot of questions like, why didn't they fess up? And my theory is that it was such a big deal. Like, this still contributes 42 million pounds to Scotland's economy every year. That they didn't, it was at the point where, like, the royal family was into the Loch Ness Monster. Like, Charles Lindbergh, you know, the guy who crossed the Atlantic? He looked for the Loch. Everybody loved the Loch Ness Monster. So there was this idea that maybe if they fessed up, people would be really mad at them.
Why did the London press say that he felt like he was alive after, like, the other countries said they killed him?
Because the Loch Ness Monster became a symbol of British resiliency during the war. So you know the phrase, keep calm and carry on? They were writing stories about how, much like the British soldier has taken bombs, the Loch Ness Monster has taken bombs and is carrying on. This is real! Like, this happened in real newspapers. And so, it's nice. I like this because it's easy to look back on these stories and say, like, that is ridiculous, right? But there are occasionally times where, if we're thinking critically and using our media literacy skills, we can look at newspapers today. So, check the bio. You know, check your URL. If it says CNN.com, okay. If it says Bob'sWebsite.com, we're going to think critically, right? We're going to think before we share. Any other questions?
What's your next book you're writing?
I'm writing a book about World War II soldiers who fought using inflatable weapons. It's a true story. They're called the Ghost Army. And it was a group of artists and designers and architects and writers who used inflatable tanks, trucks, and guns, and sound effects and acting performances to fool German troops into thinking that American units were in some places when they were not.
Wow.
It's great. Yeah.
And it's really good.
Yeah.
I get to read it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.